Welcome to The West Steps, a podcast from the Colorado Children's Campaign that explores issues that impact Colorado kids and families. I'm your host, Beza Tedes. Welcome to The West Steps. We have two guests in the house today, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hey, everybody. I'm Stephanie Pérez Carrillo. I'm one of the policy analysts here at the Children's Campaign.
And hi, I'm Erica Manawato. I'm the research analyst at the campaign.
And today we're going to talk about something that we've already discussed on this podcast before last season, issues around food security and hunger. There's a new report out, I hear, through the grapevines.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us how that report came to be and what the main purpose was?
Yeah, so as Beza mentioned, we were on this podcast last year, and the efforts kind of began way before that when we started the Lunch Cabinet Coalition back in 2018. And the reason we started that coalition was mainly because we wanted to expand and increase access to school meals for all school kids. And so in that process, we developed what was called the Lunch Cabinet Coalition. Mm-hmm. And in an effort to make sure that our policy was actually doing good work and addressing some of the issues that students were facing, we put out a student survey and asked students what their experiences with lunch was. And we heard a number of things, but one of the things that stood out among all students was the amount of time that they had to eat. So when we first heard this in the survey, that wasn't really our policy priority. That wasn't what we were working on that session. But we knew that if we increased access and kids didn't have time to eat, mm-hmm. that would kind of defeat the purpose of our work. Yeah. So last year.
Important.
So we asked a few members of the Lunch Cabinet Coalition if they were interested in exploring this topic a bit further. And we had one partner specifically, Rainey, who we met with last year and who had already been doing some of this work but wanted more research and some more information. Mm-hmm. And so since the Children's Campaign does really quality work around research, we told her that we would start doing some digging. And so we kind of started this process and this project last year and started asking folks, what do we know about time to eat? What resources currently exist? What data currently exists around this? And so I think Erica is going to share with you, but one of the things that we found is that the research and the data is limited specifically for Colorado.
Mm-hmm. So just I understand exactly. We're not talking about what kids are eating. We're talking about how much time they have to eat.
That's correct. Yes.
That's correct. And it seems really almost insane to think about how much time one would need to eat lunch. But I think as we did get some of the findings, I'm hoping that you guys can explain further why the time was important and why we even talking about time when we're talking about food. Mm-hmm. So before we jump into some of the findings, can you talk to us about who else was involved? Was it just the two of you and your little
Luckily,
offices?
No. Much smarter people were also involved.
No, I think thankfully we already had a lot of really good partners in this work because of the foundation laid for the Lunch Cabinet Coalition. And you know, other partners existed in this space way before we did. We know that there are a ton of school wellness coordinators and providers that have been doing this work for decades. Mm-hmm. But I think when it came time to create a table that was inclusive and that represented a lot of different groups, including students, providers, policymakers, legislators, all the folks that are needed for this process, we brought that group together in 2018. And shortly after that, the Colorado Health Foundation had their Blueprint to End Hunger work group kind of kick off. Mm-hmm. And so that was another group where we kind of merged the efforts, mm-hmm. and they took this as one of their issues along with many other things. So the partners that sit at the Lunch Cabinet Coalition are a combination of direct service providers, community organizers, youth serving organizations, legislators, and organizations like ours, Grasstops organizations. And specifically for this brief, we asked folks who wanted to work on this and who felt really passionate to work on understanding what the challenges and time to eat were to come forward and to create a small group. And so we did just that. Mm-hmm. And so we had Children's Hospital Colorado at the table. We had Hunger Free Colorado at the table, the American Diabetes Association, and then the Colorado School Nutrition Association, among others. So it was a smaller group, but the Lunch Cabinet Coalition at the time we started it had 27 different organizations. So it was mm-hmm. a subset of the Lunch Cabinet Coalition that came together mm-hmm. to really brainstorm and then get the surveys out so that we could get the best information possible.
Mm-hmm. Just before we jump into the findings, I just want to emphasize, you're talking about hunger in Colorado, and there are, as you said, 27 organizations that are trying to stop something like hunger. And I think that we get lost when we start thinking about some of the findings and some of the data. But at the end of the day, we're talking about kids eating. So with that in mind, and I'm going to say it over and over again, because I think, you know, especially at the Children's Campaign, we work on very complex policy solutions. And there are still some issues left, like food security, still on the table.
Yeah, and I think that's an awesome reminder. It's just, this is one of the most basic things that kids need to function and be healthy. And I can't think of a person that would say we shouldn't be feeding kids healthy mm-hmm. meals. So yeah. I think it's a good sort of level setting point that this is a really basic need of kids that we have to fulfill. And it's simple.
Yeah. So Erica, can you talk to us about some of the findings that you guys found in this brief?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that school lunch, the reason it matters so much is because it's one of the primary tools that we use to combat child hunger. And child hunger is such a huge determinant of child well-being.
Yeah.
Kids who experience hunger are more likely to have a poorer health status overall throughout their lives. And then when they're really young, it impacts their cognitive, motor, and social-emotional development. And then as adolescents and adults, it's actually been tied to people seeing higher levels of depression and suicidal ideation. In the classroom, we know that kids who experience hunger tend to see lower math scores.
Mm-hmm.
They face a higher likelihood of repeating a grade, and then they might see behavioral problems as well. So we know that it's this huge piece to how kids develop physically, mentally, and how they perform in the classroom. And we also know that in Colorado, about 13% of our kids live in food insecure households. So that means that their families have sort of uncertain access to food, or they don't have enough food to go around. And when we look at our public schools, about 42%, so we're nearing half of the population, qualifies for free or reduced lunch. And that's because their families have lower incomes. So Colorado, as well as the federal government, we make substantial investments in delivering school lunch every year.
Mm-hmm.
In the 17-18 school year, we served almost 60 million lunches to kids,
mm-hmm.
with about 38.3 million of those going to low-income kids. And so because these lunches are key to so many important pieces for kids, we wanted to work through access to lunch can't be the only factor.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's other pieces, like what's the nutritional content, and are kids actually finishing their meals?
Yeah. The actual act of eating.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The simple act of eating. And so we know from research from the CDC that 20 minutes is generally seen as the best practice, that in 20 minutes, most kids and adults as well can sort of eat their meal and then also process that they're full.
Mm-hmm.
But when kids get less than that time, there are some sort of studies that we've seen in the last few years where some students are eat less. So they'll eat less of like vegetables, fruit, their entree, they'll drink less milk. And then other students, in some cases, they eat faster, which is linked to obesity,
mm-hmm.
Because they know they have less time. And we also see there's some relationship with time to eat to plate waste, because when kids have a longer lunch period, we've seen plate waste decrease as well.
And what is plate waste?
Plate waste is the amount of food on their plate that they were served that mm-hmm. they ultimately don't eat and throw away.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the state and the federal government are, you know, investing in those meals, we want to see kids eat what they need to eat to feel full and eat as much as they can in the time that they can.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're throwing away most of their lunch, we know that something's wrong with
yeah.
how it's being delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2019, what we did is we administered these three different surveys, and we gave them to public school administrators, public school health professionals, and then also we were able to send one out to parents.
Mm-hmm.
And these are small, convenient samples, which means that these are people that are already in our networks.
Yeah.
This isn't a randomized control trial or a mm-hmm. huge study. So mm-hmm. the data are not extremely reliable, but mm-hmm. they're something. They're a mm-hmm. measurement to get an idea of what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. Well, we ended up hearing back from 63 administrators in 14 counties. Mm-hmm. And most of administrators, about 63%, said kids got between 10 and 20 minutes for lunch. But only 13% of the whole group said it was written into their district wellness policy. Oh. So for the most part, we saw administrators say this isn't part of a policy. But in practice, we're seeing kids get 10 to 20 minutes. In that range, that could be as low as 10 and a half minutes, right? It could be as high as 19 and a half minutes. That's a big range, but that's most of them saying that kids are getting less than 20 minutes.
Just before we jump in, so most schools don't have a policy about the amount of time required to eat.
This is from this sample, which is limited.
From this sample.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, from about 14 counties mm-hmm. we're talking about. And then when we talked to nearly 100 school health professionals. This was a larger sample from 21 different counties. Mm-hmm. And we saw about the same thing there. 71% said kids are getting between 10 and 20 minutes.
Okay.
And about a third of the sample said the minutes were specified. And then I think a different finding that we were really interested in is that we heard from 1,000 Colorado parents on the parent survey. And the questions for the parents were different because we know that parents aren't typically with their kids during the school day. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to be able to sort of judge how much time their kids are getting. Yeah. But we asked them basically, does your child talk about not having enough time to eat? Like, is that a frequent conversation? Do they finish their lunch at school? And what we saw was that 88% of the parent sample said their kids either always or sometimes talked about not having enough time to finish their lunch at school. So we acknowledge that these are really limited results because they're from a small sample and they're from people in our networks. Mm-hmm. These are not state representative results. Mm-hmm. But what we'd love to see going forward is sort of more rigorous methods to understand exactly what's going on at a school level and how much time kids are getting on a daily basis. We recognize that if a number of minutes is written into a policy, that doesn't always translate to practice, too, because schools are under a lot of pressure, right, and kids and teachers are doing a lot of things during their day. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to make sure that kids get a significant amount of time for lunch.
Mm-hmm. So I think just to see if I understood what you were saying, mm-hmm. The samples were small, so you couldn't really draw generalizing ideas about all of Colorado. But from this sample, you saw that very few school districts had written policies about the length of time. And parents also noticed that kids talked about not having enough time to eat. Can you talk to us the implications? I think you hit a little bit on the fact that it's more likely that food that we are investing in, like for kids to eat, is getting wasted. And you earlier on, you talked a lot about how, having access to food has these lifelong outcomes for kids' well-being. But can you talk a little bit about the implication of not having enough time? So what does that do then for, you're saying 20 minutes is a good practice. So when you have 10 minutes, what do you expect to see?
I think based off what we know from the body of research is mm-hmm. that we would see kids who are either throwing away quite a bit of food mm-hmm. Because they don't have time to eat it or eating too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And for the kids that end up not eating the amount of food that they need, we would see impacts potentially in the classroom. So we know that hunger has impacts in the classroom, and we know that it has impacts for physical development.
Mm-hmm.
So we would see impacts sort of all over their lives. And the frustrating part of that is that our state has committed to investing in these lunches for kids. So mm-hmm. We've gone the distance of making sure they're provided to kids. This is an issue of delivery and mm-hmm. whether kids are actually, have the space that they need to be able to consume the mm-hmm. lunches. And so, and we can, Stephanie will probably jump in here too about what we talk about at the end of the brief, which goes into some recommendations, but yeah. We sort of do two areas of recommendations. First is around, we want to support the efforts that are going on to collect more data around time to eat. So we know that CDPHE's Smart Source survey asks an item about time to eat to school staff, which is good. We have those, we have some data from those. That survey isn't state representative yet, but we hope that it will be. And then we're also, we wonder if the Healthy Kids Colorado survey would be interested in adding an item so that we can ask students directly about time to eat and what their experience is, just to have a stronger knowledge in the years to come around what's going on in our schools on a day-to-day basis. And then we also outline a bunch of other recommendations for schools and districts and then state agencies and also for legislators. Steph, do you want to talk about those?
Yeah, can you just mention a couple of those?
Sure. I think Erica mentioned a few of the recommendations that we included in the report, but more largely, we're considering a statewide context, right? There's a reason we didn't do this by ourselves. There's a reason we did it in partnership. And one of those reasons is that the recommendations included are not exhaustive. As Erica mentioned, there are folks around the state that are doing incredible work, but there are some prohibitions in statute that kind of limit or constrict and tie the hands of school food providers and the folks that are doing this work and are trying their best to maximize time. And I think one of the inhibitors is that our current state statute only incorporates language that says adequate time to eat. And I'm sure you know that smart enough people can make a decision about how much time is adequate.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the constraints. Another one of the constraints is that in statute, we have an amount of time that students are required to be in school for instructional purposes. That does not include seated mealtime. And so I think we have a lot of partners that would be interested in seeing how we can incorporate seated mealtime in instructional time. Because when administrators are making decisions about class time and are making decisions about how much time they're giving students to eat, they're trying to maximize instructional time. And I think to Erica's point, like one of the things that, at least in my experience as a classroom teacher, was when I saw my students during lunch, one of the things they would do was rush through the line. They would sit down, eat really quickly, and what they would often eat was dessert or the thing that they enjoyed most. And what stayed on the plate was vegetables. And it was already time to leave the lunchroom. And you notice that kids weren't having, you know, access to vegetables and some of the things that they need that are part of a healthy diet. So,
which, if we're real about, we adults do that all the time.
Yeah,
and I have like,
I start with dessert every
right?
time.
Right? If you have like 5 minutes, you're like, let me eat the tastiest
cookie.
Thing. It might not be the most nutritious thing, right?
Yeah.
Very human response, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think a lot of our providers around the state have seen that. Like we're, as teachers and as folks that saw this firsthand, we know what some of the challenges are. And we know that schools and districts are doing as much as they can to increase and use that time as much as possible. But there are some constraints that they're operating within. So I think, you know, in addition to the added questions in the survey is instruments and making sure we get a statewide representative sample, thinking about language in statute that can be removed or language that can be altered to incorporate a recommended number of times. So, you know, Erica mentioned 20 minutes and that comes from the CDC. And so when you think about how much time it takes your brain to process satiety, that's around 20 minutes. And so, as I mentioned, the recommendations list is not exhaustive, and the work that we've done to this point has been done in partnership. So any type of change that we pursue, I imagine, will be done in partnership. And one of the things that I think is really exciting is that there are districts that we highlight that do have school wellness policies, and I think we'd like to see other districts develop school wellness policies as well to incorporate mealtime and to say, hey, this is what is recommended, and this is what we know is right for kids, and we're going to do everything that we can to give them the maximum amount of time to finish their meals.
Awesome. Can you talk to us about, I'm assuming, you know, this brief isn't the only thing that the state of Colorado is doing. That would be very sad. despite how great the brief is.
Shocking.
If you guys can talk through some of the efforts that partners and the Children's Campaign and other organizations are doing to combat hunger in Colorado, especially for kids.
Yeah, I think we're just one organization of many folks around the state and other organizations that are doing the work of making sure kids and families have access to food. And so, you know, the Lunch Cabinet and the work of the Blueprint and Hunger Work Group 5 has been predominantly focused on school meals for children in the National School Lunch Program. And that work group has been focusing on the Summer Food Service Program, which we know is coming up and which we know is important for summer participation. So the Blueprint and Hunger Work Group has predominantly been focusing on the marketing campaign around ensuring families know that that's coming and that they can participate and how they can find a site where they can get some food. So that's some work. And then when we think about what's happening at the legislature, we have some really good partners over at Hunger Free Colorado who are working to increase a line item that would give them more funding for SNAP outreach, specifically in rural areas. And it would give us 100% federal match for whatever money we do appropriate towards outreach to ensure that this is for families to participate in SNAP. And so we know that it's an effective anti-hunger strategy. And so if we can get folks to participate, naming that our participation has been historically low in this state, I think there are a lot of opportunities as it relates to the link to the National School Lunch Program. You know, and then I think the only other piece that I can think of at this point in time is the boots on the ground, the folks that are doing this work around ensuring that kids have access to locally procured food. And so our friends over at LiveWell Colorado are ensuring that not only do we support our farmers, but our students in getting access to fresh local food. And so they're going to be working on a cleanup bill, on a technical bill to ensure that kids have access to local fresh food. And so I think there's a lot of great efforts happening, and we're just so happy to be part of such a collaborative, thoughtful coalition that really cares about addressing the bottom line. And the last thing I'll mention is the Blueprint and Hunger Work Group. I think there are five work groups. We as the Children's Campaign are part of work group five, but the work of, you know, the rest of the work groups is largely to end hunger in Colorado because we know it's a problem that we can solve. It's just a matter of using our minds and quite frankly, getting rid of stereotypes and stigmas that are associated with receiving assistance when you need it. And I think that's one of the hardest pieces, where there's a stigma associated with students who are receiving free and reduced price meals. There's a stigma with associated with receiving SNAP dollars and going to your local food pantry. And I think those are some of the pieces that are the hardest to change. So those are behaviors and mindsets that the coalition, the Blueprint and Hunger Work Group, are working to dismantle. And once we could do that, I think we'll all be bought in behind this idea that, like, we can address hunger and we can solve this problem.
Awesome. I think the last question I have for both of you is how people can get involved. I think this is one of those issues that feels almost not real unless you're in there. And especially to think about how food insecurity can impact kids for the rest of their lives if we don't solve it as early as possible. Can you give us ways people can get involved, anything from reading this brief and sharing it to old ways of advocacy? How can people get involved?
Yeah, I think one of the best ways to get involved is if you have a kid, to be involved and, like, understand what's happening within their lunchroom. Rainey, the person that we spoke with last year, insisted on sitting and observing school lunches. And I'm not suggesting that parents do that. I'm not suggesting that people do that, but I think she was really passionate about understanding, okay, like, what are the real time constraints that my child is facing in the lunchroom? And so I think advocating for your kid and asking administrators questions about how much time are kids given to have their lunch meals, and as it relates to this specific policy, and, you know, being supportive of the school, knowing that they're probably trying their best to ensure kids have adequate time to eat, but being the force that that asks questions and being the voice for their student when maybe their student doesn't know to ask or to speak up in this realm. And then I think more broadly, a lot of the work groups and coalitions that I mentioned are always looking for folks who want to be involved and who are really passionate about this. And that feels like a lot of work and like a stretch, but I know that with Zoom and all the teleconferencing options, there's so many different ways to be present in those coalition meetings as a valued community member and as probably an expert in your experience. And so I think finding ways to connect with the work group, finding ways to plug in with Hunger Free Colorado and LiveWell Colorado, who are doing work around the state and local communities to expand access to food, and asking them if you can get involved and volunteer. And I think as much as we can, and to the extent where we're looped into these efforts, we try to share some of those opportunities on KidSlash, mm-hmm. you know, to be a good partner and to also be a good coalition leader and convener. And so we're often posting those opportunities on KidSlash. We're sharing them on Instagram, mm-hmm. on Facebook, on Twitter, on all the social media. And so depending on how much time you want to devote to this effort, it can either be a really light lift or a really time intensive lift. And it's really up to you and the type of capacity that you have to do that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for both of you making the time for us. And hopefully this won't be the last time we talk, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Anytime, we'll come back.
Thank you. So some ads this time. Steph, who's our sponsor?
Support for this episode is provided by Effect, a Denver-based digital agency that helps campaigns win elections.
I like winning elections.
Effect. Winning elections is important.
It's very important.
Effect supports outstanding candidates and initiatives that are focused on winning their election in order to positively transform communities. Learn more at EFFCT.org.
I didn't get that. Can you repeat that last part?
EFFCT.org.
Right. No, right? I didn't see the music coming in at the end.
Talent.
7 Steps is a production of the Colorado Children's Campaign. If you want to support our work, go to coloradokids.org.
Fun fact, you can also find out Erica's pet peeves on her profile page on our website.
Please don't do that.